Today's share in Mishneh Berurah Yomi is Daf Samach Gimel Omud Aleph. And we're actually on the fourth share of the Mishnah Sofrim. And we'll be looking quickly at the letters Hey, Vav, Zayin, and Ches today and then doing our second Chazar share on Hilchos Tefillin. The words of the Mishneh Berurah can be found on page 122 and on Samach Beis Omud Aleph in the Mishneh Berurah. And the Mishneh Berurah tells us that the letter Hey is made up l'chatchila with a tag katon l'mala mitzad small. On the left side of the letter hey, there has to be a small little tag at the top left. And on the right-hand side, the top of the letter hey has to be squared off. It can't be circular like a resh, but it has to look, the top part of the hey and the bottom right part of the hey should look like the letter dalet. The nekuda shebesocha, which is the left leg, which is obviously smaller than the right leg, there has to be a space between the left leg and the gag, has to be properly placed, not too close to the roof and not too far away from the roof. It should be somewhat in between, that a person who's an average person looking at a Sefer Torah from a distance of about an amma or so would recognize that there's a space over there. Shouldn't, again, separate it too far and not too close to the roof. The imnaga begaga, if it does touch the roof at all, even a little bit, a very thin hair-like touching, that passes the letter, because then it looks like a ches. And even if a young child were to read it in that situation, since it is a ches, even though the child may read it as a hey, that wouldn't help you. The left leg of the hey should be all the way towards the end of the gag of the hey. It shouldn't be in the middle of the gag of the hey, obviously not touching it. And if it is, it's a problem potentially according to some poskim. Others agree that at least b'dieved it might be acceptable. This left leg of the yud is tapered going up. It's thicker at the bottom and it tapers towards the top of it. And there's a thickness to it towards the inner aspect going from this yud, this little leg of the hay, towards the right side, and nothing should be sticking out towards the left side because then it could be mistaken for the letter tough. Again, as with the letters that we did yesterday, this is a very, very brief description of it, and Ayin Shom, look much more carefully in both the Mishneh Berurah's Mishneh Sofrim and all the Dirshu footnotes for those that are interested in more details. The next letter is the Vav. One has to be careful with the Vav that its top part, which is a little bit extended to the left, doesn't extend too far to the left, because then you'll have the letter Resh. The right leg, or the bottom down part of the Vav, again, called the right leg because there's a little bit of a leftward, topward shift, but it's really a straight line down. One should make sure that it's long enough that it shouldn't look like a Yud, and one should make sure that it's not too long that it shouldn't look like a Nun Sofes, a Nun Pshuta. You have to also make sure that it doesn't look like a Zion. Not done properly, it could be mistaken for a Zion, and that, of course, would make it possible. The letter should be drawn straight and not slanted towards either side, and its thickness along the entire body is the same, although it does taper a little bit towards the bottom. The next letter is the letter Zion. One has to be very careful. The Mishneh Berurah writes, Sorech lizor shlo tia raglo aruka. Don't make the Zion too long, because otherwise it's going to look like also a Nun Sofis, a Nun Pshuta. And he suggests making it the size of Shnei Kolmosim, which is, again, is a certain specified amount that they would understand, a sofer would understand how long that is. The head part of the Zayin extends a little bit to the left and a little bit to the right, and it won't look like a Vav in that way. It has to be squared off, and it has the three Tagin. This is one of the Shatnez Gates letters, of course, and it has the three Tagin on the left aspect of the top of the Zayin. The base of the Zayin is tapered from the top towards the middle, and it fattens towards the middle, and then it tapers again from the middle towards the bottom. And of course, there are many other pratim in terms of the tagim that we've already discussed, as well as the rest of the letter, to make it perfect. The letter Ches is the last letter that we'll discuss today. Ches is really comprised of two zayins that are connected by a connecting hump in between, if you wish, a chatotros. The right-sided part of the Ches, the right zayin, has curvature on the top, on the right side, and the zayins have to be a certain distance from each other, which is like the ovi of the kolmus, the width or the thickness of the quill, and they are connected with this chatoteres, and they shouldn't be too far apart, and they shouldn't be too close to each other. There is a what's called a makel, which is a tag godol, that you make on the left zayin on the top, not in the middle, but all the way towards the left side of it. And there are many other pratim included here as well. We'll now do some chazorah on Simen Chav Vav and Simen Chav Zayin. Simen Chav Vav dealt with somebody who only has one of the two tfilos. He has either the tfilos shoyad or the tfilos shorosh. What should one do? So each one is a separate mitzvah, and if you only have one of the two, you put on the one that you have, and you make the appropriate bracha for the one that you have. Ashkenazim do have the custom that if you only have the tfilos shorosh, you make on it both lohaniach and al mitzvahs tefillin. If you have both tefillin, you obviously should put both of the tefillin on. However, if there's some sort of an ones, some sort of an accident or some sort of a bandage or some sort of a problem, and you're only able to put one on, so then you should put on the one that you have or are capable of putting on. If a person, for whatever the reason, is uncomfortable putting on his tefillin because there are non-Jewish people around that will make fun or is afraid for whatever the reason, they'll ridicule him or possibly even hurt him. So then, we still don't want to be mevatel this mitzvah, but then you can cover up the tefillin with your talis. Normally we don't cover up the shel rosh, but in this situation one would be allowed to cover up the shel rosh. Siman Chav Zayin is an extremely important siman, and that deals with the proper placement of both the shel yad and the shel rosh. And there are many, many important halachas here that it's very much kedai to review, and this is what we'll spend the rest of today's shir on. So we've already spoken out a number of times that we put on, of course, the shel yad first, and we put it on our left hand if you are a righty. This is based upon psukim. Va'yola'osa yodcha. Yodcha is spelled over here yad keha, because it is written out fully. It's not a chav sofis. It's spelled out yud dalet chav hey. That's the major drasha. There are other drashos as well that symbolize that the left hand is the preferred place for a righty, the only place for a righty to put his tefillin on. Obviously, a person who is a lefty puts his tefillin on the other hand. Spent a lot of time discussing about ambidextrous people or people that are sholate. They have a superiority with their right hand for certain activities and with their left hand for other activities. It's too difficult to go through all of those dinim right now, but they can be very complicated. Many poskim hold that writing is the key determinant. Others hold that the majority of the activities that you do with the hand, that's the key determinant. And this is a very complex and difficult halacha l'maisa shaila that a great posik should answer for a child that's not a clear lefty or not a clear right. Indeed, if a right-handed person wears his tefillin on his right hand, he is not yotzei afilu b'di'evet. What is the proper place to put the tefillin on? So the proper place, again, darshan doubt through various psukim, as well as through our halach l'mosh misina, is that it belongs on the upper arm, on what we would call the biceps area. The biceps start in the middle of the upper arm, and they go up to their middle of the biceps, which is the height of the muscle, which is called the tapuach, and then they slope down and they end in the upper part of the upper arm. And there is, as I discussed, zones, if you wish, from the start of the elbow until the start of the insertion of the muscle, the part where the muscle starts to be recognizable on the arm. That's zone one. You cannot put the tefillin there no matter what. You're not yotzei if you put your tefillin over there. Then you have the preferred place, l'chatchila, according to the Mechaber and the Ramah, the only place where you can put it on, and that's this zone two, which goes from the start of the muscle up until the midpoint of the muscle. And that is the optimal place for everybody to put it in. Vilna Gaon has a major kula which many people rely upon, and that is that on the sloping downward part of the biceps, what we'll call zone 3, which is from the middle of the biceps until the end of the biceps on the upper arm, is acceptable according to the Vilna Gaon. Another poskim, l'chatchila, one should try to put their tefillin in zone 2 and not have to rely upon the Vilna Gaon, because the Vilna Gaon certainly says that zone 2 is good as well. But if either the tefillin are large, the person's arm is small, or it slides out of place, so one should certainly try to make sure that you're in zone 2 and 3 rather than zone 2 and 1. If any part of the tefillin are in zone 1, you are not yotzei. If the tefillin are all in zone 2, you're yotzei according to everybody. If the tefillin are in zone 2 and or 3, so then you're at least yotzei according to the Vilna Gaon and all the poskim that hold like the Vilna Gaon, and it's certainly not a bracha l'vatola. If you go beyond zone 3, you're now in zone 4, which is after the muscle is no longer detectable, before you reach the armpit, the axilla, so then that's also not kosher, even b'di'evit. The tefillin are also tilted somewhat in towards the heart. It's not directly perpendicular to the body, but somewhat slanted inwards towards the heart. A person whose heart happens to be on the wrong side of his body is a condition called situs inversus or dextrocardia. Such a person still puts his tefillin on the left hand, inclining towards the heart. He wouldn't put it on the right hand. One is cautioned about making their tefillin too large, because if they're too large, you're going to have problems focusing it in the right area, the zone 2, as we spoke about. And even for people that put on two pairs of tefillin, there is room, those that put on Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam simultaneously, which is not the commonly accepted custom, but is the custom among some Sfardim and Mekubalim. The person does have room technically in zone two for two pairs of tefillin, but this is somewhat difficult to guarantee that they'll be in the same place. And that's one of the reasons why people who do wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin don't wear them simultaneously with Rashi, because it's very difficult to make sure that they're both in the right place. But technically, there is room for two pairs of tefillin in zone two. Again, in a smaller person, a young bar mitzvah boy, or with very large tefillin, that will not be physically possible. There are many halachas that we won't have the time to go over right now, dealing with what happens if a person's wearing a cast, what happens if a person, Rachmana L'Islam, an amputee. The bottom line is, as long as there's any space that's kosher where you can put on your biceps the tefillin, then obviously the person should put it on that hand that he's supposed to put it on. If you have any space at all on the left hand, forearm where the tefillin can go, so l'chatchila, that's clearly the place that one should put the tefillin. One should also be very careful in terms of the orientation of the tefillin. A righty who's wearing lefty's tefillin, vice versa, is going to have a lot of problems. The proper way is that the kesher, the knot of the yud on the shel yad, should be facing in towards the body. It should be on the internal aspect and not on the external aspect. The ma'avarto, which is the part through which the ritzur runs through, should be towards the top of the shoulder area and not down towards the elbow area. So that's the proper orientation, obviously, the tefillin. Obviously, a person who puts on tefillin regularly will know that. But if you're borrowing somebody else's tefillin and they're not the same arm as you, for example, a lefty who puts on a righty's tefillin will have to put it down upside down in order to make sure that it's done, that the kesher should be towards the inside, which is the more important thing. And if the mavarta then is on the wrong part, it's on the lower part, that would be acceptable in a bidyevit situation. We spoke out about how the kesher always has to be touching the tefillin. It should always be touching the box, even when you're not wearing it, and certainly when you are wearing it. People do various sorts of connecting devices, different halachic shilas coming up with how you connect the yud. If you are going to use some external device, so it shouldn't be a chatzitza, the best way is to make sure that it's as tight as possible up against the bias, and this way the yud, the kesher, will always be touching the bias. There are opinions that say it just has to be very close to it, doesn't have to actually be touching it, but certainly it's preferable to be also all the deos and have the kesher of the yud on the shoyad always touching the bias as best as possible. There, of course, should be nothing separating the tefillin from your arm. Person should not put his tefillin on top of his shirt. You are allowed to put the shirt over the tefillin after you've put the tefillin on. For the shel yad, it's a private os for you, as opposed to the shel rosh, which must be visible to other people and can't be covered up. The proper placement for the shel rosh is, of course, totally above the hairline, as we've discussed. There is room on the top of the head as well for two pairs of tefillin. You really have much, much more room towards the top of the head than you do on the forehead. And a person should be very, very careful to make sure that no part of his shel rosh is below where your hairline is, or if a person is getting older and his hairline has receded, where your hairline used to be. Nobody ever had their hairline on their forehead. And if the tefillin, any part of the tefillin of shel rosh, are down on your forehead, you are not yotzei at all. And if you never had it in the right place, then you're actually making a bracha l'batola, and this is a very big problem. There's more than enough room in the back or the top part of the tefillin for the shel rosh to go, at least up until the middle of the head, if not even further back. And one should be very careful to make sure that it's also located in between the eyes, above the forehead area where it's supposed to be. In the back, the kesher of the dalid that's in the back of the tefillin should be above the nape of the neck, the groove, if you wish, where the skull is tapering down, and at least it should be above the end of the hairline in the back of the neck, which is, again, where the hair used to be growing, where the roots of the hair were coming out, now where the hair flows down. The person has very long hair. This can be a problem of a chatzitza, theoretically. Certainly, if the hair is not supposed to be there, if it's a comb over, or if hair is brought in from externally, like some sort of a toupee, that's a problem of chatzitza. But if a person has a hair transplant, that actually is not a problem. That is now considered as natural hair. One shouldn't have excessive hair, lechatchila, because that could potentially be a chatzitza as well. after one puts on the shoyad, so one makes the windings, the ritzuos wrappings around the forearm. There is different customs exactly how to do this, but there should be 7 wrappings around the forearm. The question of whether there's an additional wrapping around the upper part of the biceps, whether that counts towards the 7 or not, different opinions. And then one wraps around, after one is put on the shorosh, one finishes the windings around the finger. There are different traditions as to how to wrap this, but the most common way is to wrap it around your longest finger, your middle finger, one time in the middle digit, and then 2 times in the upper digit, the part that's closest to your palm and wrist of your hand, and then to make additional windings so that will look like the letter shin on your hand, and this way you have the shin on your hand, the dalet on the back of the tefillin, and the yud, and that spells out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, Shakai. This will conclude today's shiur.